This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, August 11th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this weekend edition of Ozarks, we learn about the creation of a new online index that allows users to search through thousands of historic Arkansas photographs. Also, Feed Fayetteville's Soil Cycles program is a food recovery initiative that redirects food waste away from landfills, turning it into compost. We visit a community garden to learn more.
Plus, finding artistic inspiration inside Walmart. And Becca Martin Brown stops by, as always, to tell us what's up in entertainment. The Fayetteville-based duo Heirloom performs a song inside the Furman Garden Performance Studio, and more.
But first, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has a recap of this week's news.
Earlier this week, we got an update on construction of Interstate 49 through Arkansas. Completing I-49 through the state has long been a goal of the state's Highway Transportation Department. In Arkansas, the interstate will include what is to become the Bella Vista Bypass, current portions of Interstate 540, and new sections of I-540 currently under construction. Danny Straisley of the Arkansas Highway Transportation Department says that one of those sections under construction is an extension of the interstate through the Chaffee Crossing area in the River Valley.
It'll be a new connection from I-40 down to the Chaffee Crossing, and then from south of the Chaffee Crossing location all the way down through, you know, just the western side of the state where you've got communities like Mena, DeQueen, and on down into Little River County on to where I-30 exists.
Straisley says that early cost estimates for completing the stretch of I-49 from south of Fort Smith to Texarkana are around $2.2 billion, and that includes both design and construction costs. Straisley says that no overall funding has been allocated for the stretch of Interstate 49 that will run through the Ouachita Mountains.
But, you know, as these other components are put together, I mean, it makes sense to do the work on what will become I-49 in northwest Arkansas because of the population center and the traffic volume. It makes sense to work on what will become I-49 in southwest Arkansas at Texarkana. That's a major entry port into the state through Interstate 30. The traffic volumes support it, and of course, once it's connected through to Louisiana, you'll see a lot of traffic coming up from that state as well.
Interstate 49 will eventually connect New Orleans to Kansas City. As the highway is set to intersect Interstate 40 in Crawford County, area leaders have long eyed the economic benefits that the area will reap from having a major north-south and a major east-west corridor meet in the area. But it could be many years before that corridor is completed. But a project that will visually connect cities in northwest Arkansas is getting underway right now. New wayfinding signs will soon be installed in the cities across northwest Arkansas. The pilot project is a partnership among the cities and the Northwest Arkansas Council. Robert Smith is the communications specialist for the council.
So what people will see this month is about 60 signs in the seven cities. Over the course of the next few years, really, you'll see another 200 signs go up. Five of the seven cities have decided to put up all of their signs. So there's this initial pilot project that is the 60 signs, and then most of the rest will be up before the end of this year, and then you'll see a total of 260 signs.
The pilot project is being paid for by a grant from the Walton Family Foundation. Smith says that while most residents in the area know how to get to Arvest Ballpark in Springdale or where Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art is in Bentonville, the signs will point to other destinations, such as the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale, the Rogers Aquatic Park, and city halls and parks throughout the area. But he says that the signs will also be helpful for visitors to the area as well.
It's really a confidence builder. You feel a little bit like an insider when you go to a place and you know you can easily move from point A to point B. The hope is that you go back to where you're from and you talk about that experience, and that positive experience, that ease in getting from point A to point B will convince others to visit Northwest Arkansas.
Cities participating in the program include Bentonville, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Eureka Springs, Lowell, Siloam Springs, and Bella Vista. And getting between all of those cities in an electric car may be a little bit easier. Drivers of electric vehicles now have one more publicly accessible connection to the power grid in this area. A new charging station has been installed in the public parking lot across from the Fayetteville City Administration Building. Peter Nierengarten, Sustainability Director for the City of Fayetteville, says that Level 2 charging stations, like the one installed at the Mountain Street lot, do provide faster charging than most at-home chargers, but the fill-up time is still considerably longer than pumping a tank of gas.
If a vehicle were to pull in with a nearly depleted battery, they'd be looking at 6 to 8 hours of charging time at the station. You know, if they had only a half depleted battery, they'd probably be looking at more like 2 to 3 hours of charging time to completely top their battery off. And our hope is that electric vehicle owners will choose to park at this location, and then while their vehicle's parking, they'll do some shopping at some of our downtown businesses, maybe visit the Fayetteville Farmers Market. You'll cruise down to Dixon Street. Just take advantage of all there is to offer in downtown Fayetteville while their vehicle is being filled up with electricity, so to speak.
The charging station is only the fifth in Northwest Arkansas and the third to be installed in Fayetteville. The next closest stations include one in Fort Smith and one in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Nierengarten says that Ozarks Electric Cooperative approached the city with the idea of installing a charging station on a city-owned lot.
So basically they would pay for the purchase of the charging station, and then all we had to do was come up with the money for the installation, so the electrical work to actually plumb the thing in, hook it up to an electric meter, which cost about $1,000, and we used some leftover grant money from a 2010 Home Depot grant to pay that portion.
Nierengarten says that the city won't assess a fee for drivers charging their electric vehicles other than the normally metered fees for parking in the lot. In the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. Many artists have favorite subjects to paint. Still life, portraits, landscapes. For Brendan O'Connell, inspiration comes from a place many of us are familiar with.
This is the Walmart in Fayetteville, and I've been painting Walmart since 2004.
It's not just the stores all across the country, it's everything inside those stores that captures Brendan's eye. His Walmart series includes canvases swept with color, often the edges of the real world slightly muted. His paintings include studies on a shelf of Quaker Oats canisters, a row of Wonder Bread, or the back of a man examining a column twice his size of Utz potato chips.
I originally started the idea because I was painting about everyday American life or everyday activities. And then I followed someone out into the world to shop, and I kind of ended up getting stuck here.
His series of works from inside the walls of the world's largest retailer have attracted plenty of attention lately. He's been interviewed on NPR. The Boston Globe dubbed his popish stylings a Warhol of Walmart. The New Yorker profiled him earlier this year, and this spring he sat across the table from Stephen Colbert. This week he was in Northwest Arkansas, and not just at the Walmart on Mall Avenue in Fayetteville, to do some work with what's expected to be the largest art event in history, a project he's taking on with the help of at least 1 million school children. More about that in a few minutes. First, back to his time spent painting inside Walmarts. He's now welcomed in the retailer stores, though that hasn't always been the case.
You know, that's sort of been the evolution of the narrative. I went from being the guy who got thrown out for taking a picture of the cashier to now I can set up on any aisle in any store in America and just paint away, you know.
A documentary about his work inside Walmart has been made. It's titled Blocking the Bread Aisle. Tuesday afternoon, he was standing on the edge of the produce section, and we drew a few glances, even a few stares, from some shoppers as Brendan talked about why he became fascinated with the shoppers of Walmart and what they were looking at for his series.
What's fascinating is that we have this reaction to man-made imagery. It wasn't until, you know, 500 years ago, the only man-made imagery anyone saw was the stained glass window at a church. And so if you think in 500 years what we have done to the human retina, you get up in the morning, You brush your teeth with images from your toothpaste. You have your bowl of cereal, your coffee, and then you turn on the TV or you turn on your computer, and you have seen more man-made imagery before noon than people saw for decades.
And say George Washington, perhaps on his lifetime.
In his lifetime, easily, before noon. So we have this visual richness that didn't exist previously, man-made visual richness.
Man-made visual richness can provide a wide breadth of color for a canvas, but for some it can also be an overwhelming amount to take in. A landscape of paste, Picante, Elmer's glue, and Tide can make some people anxious, even cynical. Brendan O'Connell says he understands that.
I get that, and part of the Walmart series paintings is about freezing some of those moments, of freezing the blur of when I'm pushing a cart and I see the image out of the corner of my eye. And part of the thing that's interesting about the Walmart series is that I half the people who have bought these paintings never bought a piece of contemporary art before, and the other half had never been in a Walmart before. So we have this very democratic approach. And one museum curator said, you're going to have this painting that Alec Baldwin bought, but it might become a t-shirt that every Walmart employee wears. And that democratic approach to art.
His paintings in his Walmart series are framed around humans as often as they are products. His piece, simply titled Deli, catalogs one of those moments where he stops the blur. A woman rests her foot on the bottom of a shopping cart as she waits in front of the meat section. Around her, an impressionist view of the green and white tiled floor and an orange and red background of boxes. Another painting, Blonde with Yams, freezes a woman's consideration of a canned vegetable's ingredients. These paintings are presented without any sort of irony.
Nobody is buying an apple or a banana ironically. It's just happening. It just is. So I like the idea of, you know, just kind of capturing the sense of people interacting with the environment. The idea of irony is completely absent here. So it's only in a sort of snarky Eastern view of what Middle America is about, do we get that sense of irony. And, you know, I love irony with the best of them, but I didn't want the series to be the basic punchline.
It's the everydayness of shopping that interests O'Connell. Walking into a Walmart with an easel and a palette offers almost an exponential opportunity for subject matter. He says, for an artist, that's a gold mine.
There's the famous story now of my mother being in my local Walmart, and Meryl Streep was in line in front of her and a lady in a muumuu behind her. And, you know, there aren't many places on earth that sort of democratic approach to humanity is present. But Walmart is definitely one of these places.
And is that part of the attraction?
That is definitely the appeal. And also the idea of we're in this environment. And 150 years ago, Paris was the most metropolitan place on earth. And if I had an army of buyers over a month period, they couldn't have bought 1/1000th of the goods you find in your local Walmart, which that is kind of astonishing just in terms of the muchness of things. And I just love seeing patterns and people and just the interaction. It's one of the last public spaces on earth where people are actually interacting with things before they consume or purchase them.
It is a similar everybody is included ideal that is the fuel for the EveryArtist.me project he's helping develop. Inspired in part by the idea that everybody is an artist, and by the fact that when he was young, growing up in Georgia and later in Paris, able to tap into a support system that allowed him to develop his art when he was young, he's seeking artwork created by a million young people. In April 2012, Brendan and his friend Brett Kling helped fill a football field in Bentonville with art created in one single day. Guinness Book of World Records still recognizes the more than 8,400 pieces as a record for the largest number of artwork created on the same day. Now, Brendan O'Connell wants to engage at least 1 million kids producing their art.
I think our culture is in the moment of a creativity crisis. And if you go by the testing that they do for kids, where our kids are test lower on creativity than they did 20 years ago. And when you think of the amazing problems that are facing our culture, it's creativity that will be the source to resolving them. And I have a 10-year-old, I have a 7-year-old. For me, when I think about their future, the two skills that I feel the need to impart to them is the idea of creative thinking and collaboration. In this EveryArtist.me event is all about both creativity and collaboration.
Is there a link, do you think, between creativity and critical thinking?
Absolutely. You know, I think if you look at every, the quote we use in our, one of our bumpers is, the Stone Age didn't end because they ran out of stones. You know, the idea of creativity drives all innovation. If you look at any development in our society as a species, it came from alternative thinking. If everything was always the same, we'd still be with the stones. And so that's kind of the model for the future is how do we get kids to... The other example I have is most 30-year-olds spend more time, energy, and money on products and services that didn't exist when they were 20. So 10 years ago, it didn't exist. So I think my child will inherit a world that hasn't even been invented yet. And so it's our job as parents and educators to help that generation become creators of their future.
You can learn more about the EveryArtist.me event scheduled for November 21st at the website EveryArtist.me. You can see works of Brendan O'Connell at his website, BrendanO'Connell.com. He lives in the Atlanta area. He was in Northwest Arkansas earlier this week.
Thousands of historic Arkansas photographs are archived in museums, libraries, and university collections across the state. And now, many of those images can be located through a new online index. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich went to campus during the last week of summer school to meet the creator.
Summer session is heading into finals on the University of Arkansas campus, and Mullins Library is humming with activity. Some students will venture downstairs into special collections to locate historic correspondence, documents, clippings, and photographs for research projects. And now, thanks to UA journalism professor Dr. Patsy Watkins, they have a new online search tool to help find such images called the Arkansas Photograph Collections Online. Dr. Watkins researches and writes about historic news photography, so understands the challenges of locating and securing such images.
I just assumed that there was this central database in the state that would tell me what kinds of photographs were located where, and they would all be digitized, they would all be online, and I could just go and find those photographs.
After publishing scholarly articles on the ideological nuances of World War II photojournalism and the narrative photography of federal rehabilitation relief workers on Newton and Boone County circa 1935, it dawned on Dr. Watkins that some sort of centralized database was needed.
It's very tricky because you're looking for something and you don't even know if it exists. So what you do is, the first thing you do is contact a librarian, because librarians, especially reference librarians, just seem to know everything.
State and county historical associations and university libraries also contain a wealth of photographs, Watkins says.
Historical photographs tend to come into the possession of libraries or state historical associations through people giving their collections to those locations, because those locations know how to handle them. They know how to preserve them. They know how to categorize them and how to care for them.
Staff across the state are generously providing catalog content to Dr. Watkins for her database, which she began to develop 4 years ago while on sabbatical. Because she teaches full-time, she's worked on it intermittently, primarily reaching out to state and local libraries.
Who suggested libraries, different repositories around the state, and I would contact those locations, tell them what I was doing, and ask them about their information and if they were interested in being a part of this database idea.
The Arkansas Photograph Collections online database went live last autumn. Its launch was announced just recently. Dr. Watkins sits down at a nearby computer station, opens libinfo.uark.edu/special collections to show us.
And it has a welcome message, and it says, browse the inventory. Now, the inventory is, that's all the collections, all the listing of all the photo collections, and you can approach it three different ways. You can approach it by looking at the different archives, and there are about 15 of them listed. Or you can look at a list of the collection names, and there are about 100 listings, but I think there's some overlap in those. Or you can look by subject. There are, I believe, 24 subject categories.
Click on that. Let's see what kind of subject categories. And you've designed these subject categories.
Well, no, actually, I worked with Andrea Cantrell, who was here in Special Collections at that time. She's since retired. And we chose to adopt categories that were set up at the Butler Center in Little Rock. And these include things like agriculture, I'll just scroll down here, arts and culture, environment, law, military, portraits, people, politics, religion, tourism, sports, transportation, those sorts of categories.
Listed are places like the Arkansas Digital History Institute at Arkansas Tech University, Southwest Arkansas Regional Archives, UCA Archives, and of course the University of Arkansas Little Rock Center for Arkansas History and Culture. Few photographs are posted on these sites, but detailed descriptions and image locations are.
And there will be usually there is a website which describes or even lists the photographs. For example, UCA, University of Central Arkansas, has a very good website. And they divide their photographs into a number of different categories. And then you can click on the category, and it will and just scan down the photographs in that category. There may be 15, there may be 30. The photograph will have a brief caption and date information and whether it's a negative or a photo. And if you are interested in that picture, then you can contact the library with the number of the photograph in the list and some other information. There are instructions on how to do it.
Dr. Watkins, who's donated personal time on this project, collaborated initially with UA Mullins Library Special Collections Director Tom Dillard, now retired, and she's now working with new director Tim Nutt.
This is the first step. The next step, unfortunately, it's dependent on the individual libraries, but the next step is to hopefully bring the photographs into an electronic format and make those accessible from this as well.
UA Fayetteville Special Collections is hosting the Arkansas Photograph Collections online website and providing technical assistance.
Of course, Patsy was she spearheaded this project, but there are a lot of folks in Special Collections. Jeffrey Stark, our reading room supervisor, Joshua Youngblood, our research services and outreach librarian here in Special Collections. Patsy mentioned Beth Jewell and Arthur Morgan with the Mullins Library Web Services. They're the ones who actually created the web page so people can, that's the public front of this project.
So what is the most memorable photograph Dr. Patsy Watkins came across browsing her new Arkansas Photograph Collections online database?
It's a photograph that's probably familiar to Arkansans, but it was new to me. It's a picture of Al Capone sitting on a donkey wearing a sombrero.
In the 1930s, the Chicago gangster summered in Hot Springs, a magnet for mobsters who reveled in legalized gambling and thermal spring waters. The new Arkansas Photograph Collection database can be used by high school students, scholars, genealogists, and journalists. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To see the new Arkansas Photograph Collections online, you can go to libinfo.uark.edu/special collections. It is Sunday, August 11th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So I'm guessing you know who Neil Compton is, unless you've been living under your desk.
Yes.
Heard of him.
Neil Compton helped save the Buffalo River, helped start the Ozark Society.
Compton Gardens.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And Crystal Bridges in a weird kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Compton owned that property.
Right.
And when he was so involved with the Buffalo River, he wanted to bring home every kind of plant and tree that he saw. So he did.
Mm-hmm.
And his plan was to eventually create an arboretum and botanical garden, and also to sell native Ozark plants. Well, that didn't happen. The property that is now Crystal Bridges was sold to Salmon and Helen Walton,
mm-hmm.
and you know the rest.
Right.
But there's a program this afternoon at 3 o'clock at Crystal Bridges where the director of facilities and grounds at Compton Gardens and the director of facilities and grounds at Crystal Bridges are going to talk about Neil Compton's plan for that property. They found the original plans.
Where did they find them?
Not long ago. Floating around in the Compton papers.
Mm-hmm.
The plan is from 1955. And they're going to talk about how similar what he drew and what was built has turned out to be.
Wow, 58 years later.
Should be really interesting. They've also found he had test beds for things
he was
trying to grow, and they found those.
How fun.
So it's really interesting, and it's a very real piece of Dr. Compton that's still there.
Wow, and that's this afternoon.
That's this afternoon at 3. It's called Bringing Home the Buffalo. And you should go to crystalbridges.org for reservations because walk-ins will be first come, first serve.
Okay.
Also this afternoon, The King and I wraps up. Last show at 2 o'clock at Rogers Little Theater.
Did you ever get a chance to see it or just rehearsal?
I am going this afternoon.
Perfect.
When Rogers Little Theater musical wraps up, doesn't it really feel like then the next thing is school?
It really does.
You know, you have that week, but...
Well, thanks for rubbing that in.
Well,
I've worked enough summer musicals with them that you know the summer's over.
Yeah, or almost.
Almost.
We're in the gloaming of summer.
And there's a Friends of Hobbs program this afternoon at 2 with John Rule and Sarah Moore Churchill.
This is going to be very interesting.
I've written about her efforts to chronicle his life, and it should be a really interesting program.
It goes hand in hand, kind of, with the Neil Compton effort to have the plans.
It's a shame you can't be at both places.
You can't.
Hmm. No.
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 Impossible.
But you can try.
That's
right.
You
can try, and let us know how it goes.
Yes.
Sure. I'll be at the King and I, so.
There you go. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The KUAF Sunday Symphony 7 to 9 Sunday Nights brings symphonies directly to you. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony. I hope you'll join me 7 to 9 p.m. Sunday nights for all sorts of amazing symphonies, such as the one you hear now from Mendelssohn. That's 7 to 9 Sunday nights right here on your source for classical music, KUAF.
Earlier this week, we told you that the Illinois River Watershed Partnership had secured more than $1 million in grant funding to place green infrastructure throughout the area. But what is green infrastructure? Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more.
Skull Creek in Midtown Fayetteville flows freely following a late summer shower. This creek, like Mud Creek and others throughout Northwest Arkansas, is bordered by bike trails that will be part of the Razorback Regional Greenway. To preserve the integrity of these creeks, the Illinois River Watershed Partnership will use the grant money to install green infrastructure at 5 trailheads along the greenway as well as at the Watershed Sanctuary under development in Cave Springs. So what exactly is green infrastructure? Delia Hawk, director of the Illinois River Watershed Partnership, says that it is similar in function to what is termed gray infrastructure.
In particular, when you're getting stormwater out of cities, they use a lot of gray, meaning pipe and concrete and so on. But the more concrete we pour, the more impervious surface where rainwater cannot soak into the ground where it falls, but it runs off. That creates two problems. One, water picks up velocity, right? And there's more of it heading downstream. It goes directly off an impervious surface to our creeks and streams. We don't have separate stormwater systems here that treat that water before it goes into our creeks and streams.
This ability to solve both the problems of impervious surfaces and greater runoff velocity and volume is why Hawk says that the Environmental Protection Agency deems green infrastructure a better long-term investment than concrete ditches, channels, and flood canals.
We don't want flooding in our cities, but we don't want all of the bad impacts from that increase in stormwater velocity and volume to go into our creeks and streams. That's where we get a lot of erosion and a lot of pollutants that are carried away with that stormwater. So green infrastructure really helps all of those problems.
Green infrastructure to be installed will likely include pervious concrete pavers, rain gardens, vegetation, and thousands of trees to repair riparian buffers along creeks and streams. The vegetation and trees to be planted will be native species, which Hawk says are particularly drought resistant. But there are other benefits as well.
During wet seasons as well as dry, they're providing benefits. Trees provide both air and water quality benefits. So you're getting a lot more for your investment dollar. It's not as expensive to install as gray infrastructure is, and it doesn't create the secondary harm that you have when you're having that increase in velocity and energy of stormwater running into our creeks and streams downstream. A lot of landowners downstream are experiencing a lot of that erosion to their creeks and streams because of the increase in velocity and volume from our urban areas.
In addition to the actual green infrastructure to be put in place, interpretive signs will be installed to build awareness and educate the public about the functions of the green elements. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
Food waste makes up 30% of the trash that goes into a landfill. One local organization, Feed Fayetteville, has developed a green way to round up some of that waste and put it to use on community gardens with a program called Soil Cycle. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas has more.
Tons of cucumbers, zucchini, tomatoes, melons coming up, yellow squash, cabbage, carrots, kale, cauliflower, peppers,
potatoes,
pumpkins, herbs.
Alina DeGrotto lists the produce being grown in the parking lot of an old church on Locust Avenue in Fayetteville.
I'm sure I missed
some. Alina is an Episcopal Corps member with Feed Fayetteville. The Episcopal Service Corps is a federation of young adult service programs across the United States. Alina is paid by the Episcopal Diocese of Arkansas. Adrian Schoenfield is Alina's supervisor with Feed Fayetteville. She says the urban ag movement is big right now, finding ways to produce food that are non-traditional. These raised gardens, literally on concrete, are a perfect example of that, held together with bales of straw. Adrian says these gardens here are primarily for those with SNAP benefits, to show them that it is much more economical to use benefits to buy a pack of tomato seeds than a pound of tomatoes.
And also to give people that might not have a space to garden an opportunity, and also community, so we all garden together and we all learn from each other. And if you don't know how to garden but you want to learn, you can come here, and we offer the space for free for the SNAP gardeners.
Last year, Alina came across a project at a university in Virginia where a group of students were biking to school cafeterias, picking up food waste, composting it, and then using the compost on community gardens. She thought this was something Feed Fayetteville could do, close their food system.
And get some of the restaurants here on board with collecting food waste and giving it to gardens. And at the time, I don't think we even had our garden going yet, but we were planning on having garden beds here, so we decided to start building up our soil in preparation for doing organic gardening on site at our building.
Adrian says that Alina's idea came at an appropriate time. Another one of the organization's projects, Seeds That Feed, uses leftover produce from the Fayetteville Farmers Market and gives it to those in need. But a lot of the food was bad by the end of the day.
I was taking it home to compost it last summer, and we all were, and it was just a massive amount of food waste. And so it's great to now have it on site at our building. And also, this is everything that we do, we try to create a model of awareness for other people to see that, be aware of your food waste.
Fat Tire Bike Shop donated a lightweight trailer. And using her own bike, Alina began picking up waste in November of last year.
It attaches right on the back, near the back wheel, and it's actually so light. This trailer is one of the lightest, and so you really don't, it's only the weight of what you have on the trailer that you're pulling, which is nice on the hills here. But yeah, it's very simple, and the whole route takes me about 20 minutes, so it's quick.
And there's just that wooden platform on there that she sets the Rubbermaid bin on, and then goes to the restaurants, and they usually collect in buckets their food waste. And it, like she said, eggshells and coffee grounds and veggie scraps, nothing post-consumer. It's all like kitchen waste. Mm-hmm. And then, it's about a 20-minute round trip from here around and back.
Jam and Java, BHK, and Arsegas at the Depot were the first three restaurants to collect their waste for the Soil Cycle Project. Using donated wooden pallets, they built three bins for the waste in a corner of the parking lot on Locust under a row of trees.
That would be what we call like a green material, and so that will go into the first stage of the compost bin, and you want to mix in your brown materials, which we here use just straw, and that helps the decomposition to start. And so then after that's going for a while, I'll move it to the second bin, and then the other fresh stuff will come into the first, and then move it over. So the third bin over there technically is the one that's most ready to be used in the garden.
The compost is then used in the soil of one of the on-site gardens. The garden has 5 SNAP participants, but they have room for 10. Alina says that one trip to pick up food yields about 50 pounds. She does this twice a week, so 400 pounds of food waste each month. And there's actually more from those three restaurants than they can compost efficiently. They had to eliminate Arsegas from the program. Alina DeGrotto will be leaving her Episcopal Corps post at Feed Fayetteville at the end of the month. Adrian Schoenfield with the organization says they'll be looking for volunteers to take Alina's soil cycle route. For more information, visit feedfayetteville.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
Starting Monday, 11, a restaurant located inside Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, will welcome a new executive chef. William Lyle, the current executive chef at Ella's Restaurant in Fayetteville, has accepted the position and will begin working in his new kitchen August 12th. Lyle says his latest career move surprised him a little.
Well, I thought my next move would be out of the area. Ella's was, that's the cream of the crop as far as restaurants in Fayetteville are concerned. I didn't think I'd make another move in the area. But Crystal Bridges is on a whole new scale. And it's kind of hard because this will be the first time I ever really leave a job that I truly love.
Chef Lyle says Case DeGuero, culinary director at Crystal Bridges, originally approached him about the position about 2.5 years ago. Lyle says he didn't quite make the cut then, but he took another shot at the job when the position became open about 3 months ago. Lyle says the interview process is a long process that is taken very seriously.
First, we just start with a little tour, check it out, see if it's the right fit for me, see if they like me, see if I like them. And then from there, we go on to a more of a formal interview. And then I actually cooked for them both times around. And the second time, I got to cook for some of the board members. And I got to cook in the Grand Hall, which was exciting. So whether I got the position or not, I was just happy to cook in the Grand Hall at Crystal Bridges.
Lyle did get the position and says he is honored. Chef Lyle has been in Northwest Arkansas for some time now, and even if you don't know him personally, there's a good chance you may have encountered his cooking.
I moved to Arkansas about 10 years ago to go to the University of Arkansas, and then I just started working for different restaurants around the town, mainly Joe Fennell, Jose's, Bordino's, did the whole Joe Fennell cooking experience. And, you know, I just kept cooking through school to help pay my way. And by the time I had graduated, it's almost like you do what you know. And I was offered a good position up at Ella's, and I've been there ever since.
Every chef is unique. So what are some characteristics of Chef Lyle's cooking?
I don't like to limit myself to any one style. I have not been classically trained. So I like to just cook what tastes good to me and make sure a menu flows, but there's a lot of fusion on my menus. And really, it's all about using the freshest ingredients and starting. My guys claim that my line is the hardest line they've ever had to cook because you get on, you begin your shift and you're looking at a whole table of raw ingredients. And every time a dish comes in, you start from scratch. So it's all about timing at the end of the day, being able to bring all those ingredients together and put them out at the same time.
Lyle says his new job will be similar to his current position, just on a larger scale, which will afford him the opportunity to do what he loves, but for more people. Lyle says he's going to make sure the food matches up to the standards set by the museum's art.
One thing I'm excited about doing is chefs are always looking for inspiration in their menus, and inspiration is very infinite. And here at the museum, we're going to be doing a lot of food inspired by the art, by different artists that come through in the grounds around the area. So I kind of like the idea of having more of a finite range of inspirational jump starts.
It's a little more difficult when it's whatever. You need
something. Yeah, it's hard when you can do anything you want. And that's another thing I'm going to enjoy is working with Case, is that he's the visionary. He knows everything there is to know, in my opinion, about food. But nobody knows everything. But I'm looking forward to having a visionary in the kitchen to really help guide and kind of channel my thoughts.
While Chef Lyle is excited about this next step in his career, it will mean some changes in Fayetteville. For starters, he will resign from the Fayetteville Advertising and Promotions Commission Monday. Lyle has been a part of the commission for about 3 years and says this could be a good thing because it's an opportunity for a new person with new ideas to step up. Lyle's new job in Bentonville also means saying goodbye to his Ella's restaurant co-workers in Fayetteville.
Well, I'm going to miss working in Fayetteville. We have a tight family down here, but as I understand, the chefs up in Bentonville work pretty closely together. So I'm looking forward to working with a new farmers market, a new set of farmers, and new chefs, although I will miss Fayetteville greatly.
For more information about 11, visit crystalbridges.org/11. For more information about Ella's, visit ellasrestaurant.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Heirloom is a local duo comprised of Jackson Jennings and Dana Louise Eidlett. The two met when Dana was working on paintings for a show at the Fayetteville Underground. She was searching for cross-sections of cedar to paint on when she was introduced to Jackson, who is involved with dendrochronology, or tree ring dating, at the University of Arkansas. During a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio last month, the two musicians performed a number of songs, including this one called Forgive This Town. I know better now.
some girl stuck in a dream. Tattered book on the table, older than me. Open the cover, there's a chamber inside. The seeds were still in there, I don't know why.
That was Forgive This Town by Jackson Jennings and Dana Louise Eidlett, collectively known as Heirloom, inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio last month. You can catch the duo at various Fayetteville venues this week, including Greenhouse Grill on Wednesday, George's Majestic Lounge on Friday, and Mojo's Pints and Pies next Saturday. Heirloom will also be performing at 9 a.m. August 24th at Arcega's at the Depot as part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. More information is available at facebook.com/heirloomband.
And it's that time on Weekend Ozarks at Large when we have a bit of fun with clips from songs, movies, and whatever else.
Yes. So I was inspired this week because everybody's been talking about Tom Cotton for a while. And we have officially, he is officially announced.
Yes.
And so people are still talking because now that he's officially announced. And I thought it would be fun to talk about some other kinds of cotton.
Okay. So here is a montage of cotton.
Mike, check out his bacon neck.
Bacon.
Sir, lean forward and show Michael Jordan your collar.
Oh.
See how it's all curled up like bacon in a pan? See how bad this dude looks?
What's that?
Thank you.
Okay.
Not us, though, buddy. I lay flats. We're like twins.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are.
Golden Corral, the restaurant that brought you the incredible chocolate wonderfall, two words.
Cotton candy.
I didn't think they could top the chocolate wonderfall.
Until now.
Cotton candy and the chocolate wonderfall, both part of our...
Sandman's coming. Yes, he's coming to sprinkle you with sand. He'll say one, two, three, and you will be in cotton candy land.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail. Hippity hopping, Easter's on its way. Bringing every girl and boy baskets full of Easter joy, things to make your Easter bright.
Mr. Stark, we're the Williams brothers.
Oh, Mr. Stark, the Williams brothers.
We're not going to keep them all this way. Charlie, come on, show me.
All right.
Charlie, show my dressing.
Okay, come on.
Thank you.
Call me.
Virginia, for a shoe.
We're here.
Welcome to the Cotton Club, gentlemen.
And you heard the Texas hop. And you got down at the checkerboard lounge with the whiskey on the rocks. Now fasten up your seatbelt for a Mississippi jam, featuring the one and only Cotton Mouth Man. 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 Cotton Mouth Man.
When I was a little bitty baby, my mama would rock in them old cotton field back home. It was down in Louisiana, just about a mile from Texarkana, in them old cotton field.
I got a good spell. My good wife and them kids of mine, gonna get new shoes come picking time. Get new shoes come picking time. Every night when I go to bed, I thank the Lord that my kids are fed. They live on beans 8 days a night, but I get them fat come picking time.
I've been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? But I've been for Cotton Eye Joe.
And if you want to see a list of all of the items in that montage, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
Support for KUAF comes from Flora, a full-service florist with daily delivery of unusual plants, including orchids, seasonal blooming varieties, succulent gardens, and more. In addition, Flora now offers summer linens, dresses, shirts, skirts, and nightwear from CP Shades. Flora is located at 7 East Mountain in Fayetteville and on the web at floranwa.com. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes, which includes the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late night passes, plus the main stage. Performing artists include Del McCoury Band, Iris Dement, Jerry Douglas, and others. Registration and more information available at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Lowell.
Nice.
Yeah.
We don't talk about Lowell that much.
We don't. And so, Lowell, this is your morning.
I like it. Okay. I like it. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a fantastic Sunday.